You're listening to Resonance 104.4 FM. I listen to Resonance because I think it offers me a jolly good honest cup of tea. Find us on the web on resonancefm.com.
Hi, this is Brent Barber, the founding director of the Bicycle Film Festival, and this is Resonance FM. Ride on until the break of dawn, because you don't stop.
The first love of my life was not a girl, it was my very first bike. Bridgeford Park, 1985, with my dad's hand on my back. The joy of summer, no stabilizers, sweat gathering on my brow. I am flying, I am street hawk, nothing's gonna stop me now.
Bike Show on Resonance 104.4 FM with me, Jack Thurston. Is of course the Grave Architects. You've heard it on the Bike Show before, but it's always worth a second play. Well, I hope that's brightened up a pretty grim Monday evening here in London town. And it's a pleasure for me to introduce to you, listeners to The Bike Show, someone who in a very short time has really stamped his self onto the London cycling scene. Welcome, Mark Ames, bicycle blogger.
Thank you, Jack. Thank you for having me.
And thanks for coming on the show. You blog at iBike London.
I do.
And you've not been doing it for that long, since September 2009, but it's really gone really, really well for you. Tell us why you started bicycle blogging.
Yeah, I mean, I started out because I found that there was nothing quite out there that was really up my street. It didn't quite suit my own needs. So I started writing for my own sake, really, and it very quickly snowballed into something much bigger than I ever could have imagined.
Tonight we're going to talk about bicycle blogging a little bit later on. But first, I want to get into the subject of livable cities. And it's something that you've been blogging about this week because, in part, of a conference that took place last week. And they do say it's a global village. But if it's a global village, then it's a global village made up of cities. And one of the popular parlor games of the denizens of the global village is to make lists of which are the most livable, pleasant cities. If you ever read Monocle magazine, you'll see that they do that every year. And The Economist magazine, which of course is famous for ranking parts of the world on the basis of how much it costs to buy a Big Mac, has been getting in to this game by hosting a conference. Mark, you went along. I didn't go along. Just tell us a little bit about what the conference was all about.
Sure. I mean, it was a conference which brought together planning specialists, cyclists, people who are interested in the pedestrian environment or public transport. And it was a discussion about sort of what makes a city a lovely place to live in. But with the economic angle of, if a city is a wonderful place to be, then the talent will flock there. And therefore, it's a place where you can make money and be successful.
Well, one of the, I guess, chief proponents of this idea of making cities more pleasant and more livable is Professor Jan Gehl, who I guess is the intellectual godfather of the transformation of Copenhagen over the last 40 years from a car-dominated city to a walking and cycling city, which is really the envy of the world. He even invented a catchy verb for it, to Copenhagenize. Jan Gehl is partner of Gehl Architects, and he was at this conference last week to present his vision of cities for people. The whole speech that he gave is worth a listen to, but I just want to jump ahead to the section on bicycling.
What is so good about bicycling? Bicycling is, of course, coming back now strongly because it is really smart. Some of the good things about bicycling is it's almost like walking. You're almost so slow as you're walking, and you can see all the girls and you can see everything. You are in the environment. You are just not rushing through the environment. A bike lane can take 5 times more people than can a car lane, and you can have 10 bikes parked on a parking lot. And if you look at the energy you use, if you walk, you have to eat 3 potatoes to walk a kilometer, I think it is. If you bicycle, you only have to eat 1 potato. But if you are to take the same stretch in a car, you have to eat 60 potatoes. So it's by far the smartest way of getting from somewhere to using the least energy. This is, in Copenhagen, the bicyclists save 90,000 tons of CO2 every year. And this balloon is 1 ton. So we have 19,000 balloons saved every year, because there's so much biking in that particular city. And then, of course, we know now that bicyclists, they live longer. And that is, there is such a great benefit from the for the health costs if more people every day can be invited to use their own muscles rather than use escalators and elevators, lifts, and all kinds of motorized transportation. So bicycles are a very smart mode, and it's coming back in great force. So my suggestion for a simple city improvement policy is that you really make the decision that in this city we'll do whatever we can to shift the emphasis from all this car driving and whatever to a policy where we invite people to walk and bicycle as much as possible as part of their daily day doing. And to do that, we have to make the systems of good quality so that for once the people in the city will not feel that they are third priority and the car is king. The word, keyword is inviting. We should really feel that this is meant to be like this.
So that was Jan Gale. No, needless to say, you found it a pretty convincing argument, right?
Absolutely. For me, it was almost astonishing to hear someone say all of these things, which to me in my head made such absolute common sense. But to hear them said out loud for the first time in front of a room full of planning professionals was pretty revolutionary stuff in my books.
So was that the keynote speech? Was he the person who sort of set off the discussion for the rest of the conference?
No, unfortunately, he was the concluding speech, so everyone went away with fire in their bellies. But the keynote speech was by communities and local government secretary Eric Pickles. And unfortunately, Mr. Pickles wasn't able to stick around for Professor Gale's speech, and I can only say I wish he had.
Well, we'll come back to Eric Pickles in a moment. But one of the points that is often made by people when you say what we need is more bicycling infrastructure, we need fewer car parking spaces and we need more segregated, set-aside bike lanes, is that this is expensive and there's a squeeze on public finances and we don't have the money to spend on this kind of thing.
I understand those concerns, absolutely, but I think they can each be addressed. I mean, in an ideal world, it would be lovely if we could all drive around in a car. I mean, to drive in a car is fantastic, but there just isn't that room within a city for everyone to be able to do that. I mean, that's self-evident. And in London especially, you know, the buses are at capacity, the trains are at capacity, and to build a new train line like Crossrail, for example, is costing billions and billions and will take many decades. You can build a cycle network, and that's what it is, a network. It's a new form of moving many people around quickly and safely, relatively cheaply and relatively quickly by comparison. And as Professor Gale explains, it also makes a city which is a pleasant place to be.
And I think the idea of making your city more pleasant at a time of economic hardship is something that has happened before. And in fact, he makes the point that it's only ever when the city is facing a difficult time that it decides to make these kinds of infrastructure improvements. And I just want to play a clip where he explains what happened in the French city of Lyon.
It's very interesting with these cities of quality which have gained fame that most of this work was done in cold economic times. One famous example is the example of Lyon, which the industry was breaking down and they had much opposition between the unemployed in the suburbs and the city centre, and they decided to do a rather extensive public space programme, so it would be a better city to walk in, there would be better public spaces, better connections to public transportation. This is believed to be the cheapest you can do, the fastest you can do, the most visible you can do, and it's for everyone. And this was the strategy they adopted in Lyon. They actually sort of pushed themselves up by the head and did something which is seemingly very superficial, but actually raises the spirit of the people in that city. In Lyon, it was especially interesting and done with great skill. They worked with three strategies, making Lyon blue, green, and yellow. Blue for the water of the rivers, green to make it more sustainable, and yellow to give it the best lighting in Europe. They took the water into all the spaces so that you constantly are reminded this is a water city. They introduced a lot of green all over the city, and they worked intensively with artistically treating the lighting of the city so that it became known as the best lit city in the world. And very soon, people came streaming there to see all these goodies. And what was interesting is that a lot of companies came and invested there. It was very easy to convince your employees that now we are going to Lyon because that's a wonderful city.
So he seems to be making a really clear economic case for the kind of thing that you're proposing on your blog.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, sometimes people think that these ideas are quite pie in the sky and sort of ephemeral and out there, but actually it's about economics and, you know, making somewhere better. And of course, Professor Gale does it very well. To me, it's a no-brainer. I think there are a lot of people out there who think the same. It's just a question of sort of political will and convincing the powers that be.
So Eric Pickles, Conservative Cabinet Minister responsible for Department of Communities and Local Government, I think it's called, was there. Did he present a vision that was as compelling as Professor Jan Gale?
Well, he got 10 out of 10 for excitement, absolutely. He's very excited about his local government and decentralisation bill that's going through at the moment. And, yeah, so 10 out of 10 for excitement, but no, in terms of a compelling vision for the future and, you know, how we want our cities that we live in to be, absolutely not.
Well, you got up there with the microphone and tackled him on the question of bicycling, and I really just want to play the whole of this clip here. So this is Mark Ames of iBike London, London bike blogger, putting it to Cabinet Minister Eric Pickles.
We're here today to talk about sustainability in livable cities, and as a cyclist, the end product of these kind of discussions, for me and for my fellow cyclists and pedestrians, are the actual conditions on the streets. So as Secretary of State for Communities, and given the known effect that overuse of private car transport has on local communities in terms of urban blight and noise, pollution, obesity and all the rest, how do you reconcile and balance those problems that face communities with your and Philip Hammond's ending of the so-called war on the motorist?
Well, I mean, I'm a fat guy, and me on a bicycle is not a pretty sight, it has to be said.
It works for Boris. But,
Boris is more svelte than me. And, come on, you don't be such a Puritan. We can find a reason. Well, not everybody can pedalling sort of rubber knickers up and down the place to go to work. It's a question of finding a proper balance. That's all we're trying to do, is a proper balance. Boris's bike schemes work very well. I want to see that extended around the country. And I think we need to find better ways for making it safer for cyclists. Even I might venture out eventually if we can make it just a little bit safer. And I think we've got to look in intelligent ways of helping people pull cars, work together. We're also we're going to be introducing more points for electric cars. Want to see public transport being made better. That's why we're, I think, paying that more attention towards high-speed rail and the like. Everything has got to be a kind of a balance. Because the problem with the old system was we artificially restricted the number of parking places for new developments, and all that simply happened is people parked on the roads. Now, without getting too emotional about it, I lost two constituents, two young people, precisely because of this ruddy policy, because people parked on the side and fire engines couldn't get through at the appropriate place. So it's just a kind of an example of how targets don't match reality. We think job done because we've got this kind of targets, and I think the motor vehicle has a perfectly respectable place in society, and people who use them aren't the enemy. So let's encourage bikes, let's encourage walking, let's encourage obese people like me to lose a bit of weight by doing all these kind of things. But let's not regard people who travel by car as the enemy.
Well, Mark, I don't think I was very convinced by that long-winded and self-deprecating but ultimately quite dismissive response. Were you any more impressed?
No, I really wasn't. I mean, there are sound bites and then there are actions, and the actions that he's taking at the moment is that he's sort of lifting the cap on car parking spaces allowed on private developments with the good intention of trying to combat antisocial street parking, which is great. But of course, street parking as a source of revenue for local councils. Local councils are having their budgets cut massively, so they're not going to remove any of these street parking places. And alongside that, you'll have new developments with maybe parking garages for five, six, as many cars as you like. So he talks about balance, and that's exactly what I want to see. I'm not anti-car. I understand that, you know, it's a useful piece of kit for thousands of people around the country, but I do think that actually the balance that we need to tip is in favour of walking and cycling, not in favour of creating more parking spaces or a wider M25 or the rest of it.
And do you think they've invented this fictional war on the motorist as a way of, you know, just doing nothing?
Well, regardless of what I think, The Economist, who were the hosts of the conference, certainly do. They actually had an article in their magazine just last week saying there is no war on the motorist. Of course, you know, motoring in real terms has gone down in costs, whereas public transport has gone up. Things like the ride to work scheme has been sort of chopped around a bit. So, no, I don't believe there is a war on the motorist.
And do you think Boris Johnson is any different from his Conservative colleague Eric Pickles?
Boris creates PR around cycling, which money can't buy. The fact that the Mayor of London is a torchbearer for getting out there and trying it is unequivocally a good thing. But again, there are sound bites and then there is action. And to date, I'm not as impressed as I would like to have been with his track record.
What is it with these cycling Tories that get the kind of good PR for being on their bikes, but then when it comes to actually doing something as ministers, fall pretty short?
They're definitely cyclists. There's no doubting about that. They get on their bikes and that's all great. But if they want to achieve mass cycling targets, which they do, you know, Boris has this target of 5% modal share by 2026. It takes, just like if you wanted to increase the modal share for rail or bus or for driving, it takes a programme of sustained investment and planning. And that's where they fall down. You know, Boris has got this fantastic cycle revolution programme and his super highways. And he's done everything that, in fact, Professor Gale recommended that the GLA do, except actually sort of build any really good quality cycling infrastructure. So I think they talk the talk, but they don't walk the walk when it comes to putting their hands in their pockets.
My name's Buffalo Bill and you're listening to The Bike Show on Resonance FM.
Resonance 104.4 FM. The best radio station in London, says The Guardian. The best radio station in the world, says New York's The Village Voice. But we urgently need your contributions to help us continue. We accept donations by PayPal, direct bank transfer, or through the post. Visit our website, resonancefm.com, or phone us on 0207 836-3664. Do it. Donate.
Of a laboured musical link there. Chicks on Speed with their version of Wordy Rapping Hood. Mark Ames, you've been churning out the words at your blog. What are your favourite posts and what were the most impactful and successful things that you've done on your blog?
Goodness. I mean, looking back, I was looking back this afternoon sort of at what I'd done and I was astounded at how much material I had churned out, and it made me wonder, where do I ever get the time to do all of this? I think my most proud moment is a piece I wrote about the National Travel Survey, which might find a bit sound a bit dry, but basically it revealed that cycling's modal share is falling at a national level. And the post was a real call to arms, and it was a tough to our existing cycling campaigns, but it asked important questions, and I feel it had a ripple effect in the blogosphere, and there were lots of sort of responding posts, and it snowballed and it grew, and then people sort of started getting together and thinking about what they could do to change things, and that snowballed in itself into a campaign of itself, which is launching very soon. So I'm very proud to be involved with that.
Because it's not just you, you're not the only bicycle blogger, God help us, on the shores of the UK. It's quite a community. Is there something about bicycling and blogging that go together?
I don't know. I mean, it's becoming almost endemic. You know, there are a lot of us out there. Everything from people writing about, you know, their trip up Snowdon on their mountain bike last weekend to sort of quite serious statistical and political stuff. I think maybe the material that's coming out that questions the status quo is perhaps a sign of cycling under stress. You know, people sort of saying, I love cycling. I love the potential that it has, but you know, the current status quo is not good enough.
There's one particular one. I don't think we can mention the name of it actually, even on the air at this early hour of the evening, but I will link to it from the Bike Show's webpage, www.thebikeshow.net. That is definitely one of my favorites. Your favorites?
Gosh, there are so many. There is that acerbic bike blogger that you just mentioned, who dare not be named.
I'm talking about a different one. I'm not talking about crap cycling in Waltham Forest. No,
okay.
I'm talking about a different one. I'm talking about 101 101 masturbators. That's what we'll give it. It's not actually called that, but it's, yeah, that's the basic gist of it.
101 masturbators is also an excellent blog and very entertaining to read. My own favourites, I love Copenhagen Eyes, which of course sort of talks about you know, that great cycling capital and is full of ideas for improving cities. I really like the Low Fidelity Bicycle Club, which is written by a gentleman called Jim from Worthing. He's really up my street, but he's incredibly entertaining. You know, he's a very funny writer as well. And I also like, which links in quite well with Eric Pickle's At War with the Motorist.
And what are your tips for successful bicycle blogging? It must be easy to do the first couple of blogs that you've got sort of pent up inside you, that you almost thought about writing before you actually got the domain name and signed up at WordPress or Blogger or whatever. Aside the technical things, people can figure out how to blog themselves. What are your tips content wise?
Well, one of the great things about blogging is that anyone can do it, and they have the potential to reach a very large audience, but I think you do have to put some thought and investment in it. I would say decide on your market in advance. So decide what kind of bike blog are you going to be. Are you going to be photographs of hot girls, you know, riding around on Dutch bikes? Are you going to be a mountain biking blog? Are you going to be something that covers all bases? And then go and read others, learn what other people are doing. In fact, if there's someone already doing what you're doing, rather than starting your own, why not ask them if you can get involved in their blog? Get writing, write well, write often, design your site well so that it's easy on the eye. There are a lot of very poor looking blogs out there which are really difficult to read. And advertise yourself, get your name out there, comment on other blogs, be part of the community, send your web address around. Essentially just, you know, whore yourself around the internet until people start paying attention.
So if people want to follow you online, how can they do that?
It's really easy. Just go to a search engine and type in iBike London. The URL is ibikelondon.blogspot.com, and that's where you'll find me.
And you're also on Twitter, as
I am
with The Bike Show. And what's your Twitter thing?
At Mark Bikes London.
At Mark Bikes London. Well, thank you, Mark Ames, for coming onto the show. Thank you for putting that question to Eric Pickles. I think there are a lot of cyclists out there, people listening to the show, who are grateful for you for having skewered him like that. And let's hope that his rubber knickers comment comes back to haunt him. In about 1 1/4 minute's time, the One Life Left team, who are in fact wearing rubber knickers for tonight's show, and will be on air. Resonance FM's world-beating video game radio show. From Resonance FM's world-beating bicycle radio show, it's goodbye. Thanks for listening. Until next week.